Hello, and welcome. The Pusher Trilogy is a series of movies centered around the drug trade in Copenhagen. And the first movie in the trilogy is focused on the character of Frank, a low-level drug dealer who works for a local crime boss named Milo. And Frank's partner in crime is Tony, and Tony becomes the main protagonist in the sequel, and Milo is a central figure in the third film. Now, this series, it's unique in its depiction of the realities of criminal life. And the films, they're a gut punch in their level of realism. The violence is brutal, and there is no loyalty among criminals in this world. The characters, they're unsympathetic, but you can't help but sympathize with their plight. And each of the main characters in all three films, they're trapped, they're desperate, as they dig themselves deeper into a hole, fighting for their survival. And in the early part of the first film, we follow Frank and Tony doing their rounds, pushing product, meeting with the crime boss Milo, and introducing other characters, like Frank's girlfriend, into the mix. And Frank and Tony, they bond, and you get a gauge of just how low they are on the food chain in this world. And that's a bad place to be. Because every day for Frank is a headache, you know, dealing with drug addicts who can't front up with cash, and scrambling to etch out a profit. In a very cutthroat world where you're only as good as your last deal. In the film, it opens with a very ribald conversation between Frank and Tony in their car on their way to a drug buy.
Den er lige meget, om du giver hende den i munden eller mellem patterne.
Det er okay.
Det er okay.
Det med patterne.
Det er vildt okay. Har du ikke prøvet det?
Hvad med det med patterne?
Mhm.
Nej.
Det er løgn.
Nej.
Har du ikke fået suttet pik?
Jo.
Er to piger på en gang?
Ja, to piger. Du er da godt.
Har du?
Nej, det er ikke. Hvad mener du? To piger sulte min pik.
Ja.
Der skal altid mindst fire piger, det er slet ikke min pik.
Fordi den er så stor?
Den er kanonstor. Men jeg kan pisse en pige ud, så beder mig om at spærme tilbage.
Hvad? Jeg skal lige have den igen. Du har spærmet... Du pisser en pige ud.
Nej, jeg spærmer hende i hovedet, og så pisser jeg det rent bagefter. Hvad er det?
Det gjorde det da ikke.
Det gjorde det.
Du spærrer mig ind, og så bærer hun dig om at pisse dame af.
Det er da for ulækkert, mand.
Det er ikke ulækkert. Det vil hun jo selv.
Det var da perverst.
Det er det da ikke.
Det er da vildt perverst.
Jeg ser hende sgu da heller ikke mere, mand.
Det er lige meget.
Det var din mor.
I mean, this kind of exchange between men, it's been demonized today, but it's how men interact. Now, men appreciate dark humor, and it's how they let off steam, especially in highly stressful environments. Far too many men today, they repress that aspect of their nature, and they self-censor, and it's unfortunate. But this film series, it shows the reality of criminal life, and it's not glamorized. The characters are driven to desperate extremes, with no consideration for the lives that they destroy, and the psychology of many of the characters, they're a true reflection of the criminal mindset, which makes sense, seeing as many of the supporting cast were actual criminals. But a Hollywood feature would typically present a noble criminal as a lead, as a victim of circumstance, as opposed to one operating out of their own self-interest for selfish and oftentimes malicious reasons. Now, Frank, in the movie, he even states openly, "I did nothing wrong." Even though, as we see, he's extremely violent towards his customers and towards his friends. And he doesn't think twice about beating a friend almost to death. Because Frank, he sees himself as the victim. But actual victims he views as deserving of his contempt. And that's how criminals tend to view others who exhibit any sign of weakness. As deserving of predation, as deserving of manipulation and abuse. But the only person Frank has empathy for is himself. And this is where the film differs from the mainstream narrative, because typically, as human beings, we start from the false premise that others think like us and experience the world as we do. But with criminals like Frank and Milo, the way they think, the way they converse and interact are very different. It's us, the world, that owes them. The criminals, they operate from a core belief of narcissistic entitlement, and there are no shades of grey. Now, in their mind, if they're not on top, then they're a target. Now, their self-image and their sense of self-esteem is derived from establishing dominance over another. And that goes right down the food chain. Because more senior dealers, they'll exploit younger dealers and also exploit drug addicts and coerce them into degrading themselves simply for their own amusement, or push them into more serious criminal acts, using manipulation or violence to achieve this. Now, whatever it takes. Because if you don't assert dominance over others in this world, you become the target. Now, Frank, he agrees to sell drugs to an old prison acquaintance, but soon discovers he's been set up. And the stakes are high in this game. Now, as a dealer, once you have that product in your hands, you're responsible for it. So Frank, he tosses the drugs and he's cut loose by the cops. But he has to answer to Milo. And if Frank can't front up with the cash, Milo makes it clear it's Frank's neck on the line. So Frank goes to extreme lengths to survive. And it's a different world. Now, even how criminals talk, the meaning behind their words is entirely different to how we experience them. Now, words like loyalty, trust, love, they're used only in relation to dominance and control. Now, if they say that they trust someone, it means that person will do what they say because they either have leverage over that person or they're just too scared to refuse them. And love for a criminal, it's often equated with servitude. And manipulation is a key element of those relationships. And many criminals, they do operate within a framework or a code of ethics. Like Frank's girlfriend in the film, for instance, she works at a strip club to support a heroin addiction. And Frank, he refuses to be intimate with her or even kiss her. When she attempts to kiss him, he hits her. And Frank is a product of his environment. He has to be to survive. Yet we as audience members, we seem to have a need to sympathize with the criminals in movies, to have a familiar perspective or mindset to our own reflected back at us, when in reality, a criminal's objectives, their thoughts, their beliefs, and their behaviors are markedly different to ours. To a degree, many people aren't even willing to accept or can't even fathom. And the majority of drug dealers, they never see the inside of a jail cell, let alone a courtroom. And that fact seems to surprise people, but the most successful dealers, they hide in plain sight. Many hold down full-time jobs. But by the same token, there is a flip side. Yeah. Many young men turn to dealing out of a lack of purpose or a lack of opportunities. Disenfranchised young men, they're a prime target of recruitment for predators. And Frank, he would have followed the same path as those young men. You can see it in how he carries himself. Yeah, oftentimes you can see a man's entire life history just in his body language, the way he walks, the way he interacts with people and with his environment. And Frank, he's a hair-triggered temper. He's closed off, and you can see the tension he carries in his shoulders. It's the big don't F with me vibe. And often you see this with young boys who grow up without a father. Now, that boy's been deprived of the sense of personal security that a father provides. So he's missing that stopgap, as it's the father that typically prevents that hostility and that acting out behavior in young boys. Because without a father, that boy, he grows up with a chip on his shoulder, and there's no paternal authority to pull that lad back into line. And instead, that boy can begin to resent paternal figures as he feels abandoned by his father. And often, with the absence of a male figure in the home, specification can occur between mother and son. The child, in effect, takes on the responsibilities of the absent parent. And it's a recipe for disaster. That boy can become hell on wheels, angry at the world and unable to trust. So it's a two-way street. That acting out, that engaging in drugs and petty crime, it makes him easy prey for predators and for gangs. And at the same time, all that hostility and that resentment makes it impossible to forge friendships and makes him an outcast from his peer group, and in turn, leads to him being an outcast from society. and the pressure is on for Frank now. He even approaches his own mother asking for money, and you can see their relationship is strained. And Frank, he's eventually tortured by Milo, and he barely escapes with his life. And Frank is running out of options to recoup his debt, and everyone he knows has betrayed him, including Tony, who rats on him to the police, and Frank beats him close to death with a bat. And finally, his own girlfriend Vic rips him off. And Frank's fate, it's never determined by the end of the first film. But my favourite film in the series is the second one, which focuses on Tony as the main character. And the film, it opens some time after the first with Tony in jail, serving time for drug offences. So he cut a plea deal, but he's suffering from brain damage due to Frank's violent attack with a bat. He has memory loss and he's struggling mentally. And he's obviously been exploited in prison and he's run up debt. And Tony, he finally leaves prison and attempts to reconnect with his father, who his father is known as the Duke, a criminal who runs a local chop shop for stolen high-end cars, and he also dabbles in stolen goods. But the Duke has no time for Tony, and you start to see that their relationship is one with a long history of abuse, because his father has no respect for Tony. In fact, we see that no one does, which is rather ironic, seeing as the word respect is tattooed on the back of his head. And Tony, he steals a car, just to impress the Duke, which displays Tony's impulsivity without thought of the consequences, and his father scolds him, throwing a wrench at him. But finally, his father lets him partake in a heist of high-end cars that they have the ticket on, but you see how out of step Tony is in this world. He's not cut out for the criminal life. And it's apparent that he spent his whole life trying to earn his father's respect, but all he's ever done is disappoint him. And Tony is told that he's the father of a child to a young woman named Charlotte. But Charlotte is a junkie who hasn't even named the baby. And she couldn't care less about the baby's welfare. And Tony, he gets involved in a drug buy with a local dealer named Kurt, and they're buying off Milo. And now they're in deep with Milo, and things start going sideways real quick, especially once the Duke bails them both out and now owns the debt, expecting a favour in return. And you can see in Tony's body language, in his eyes and in his expressions, how beaten down he is by the disrespect he receives, and how his father's words cut him to the bone. He attempts to have sex with prostitutes, but his body fails him. And everything he attempts, he fails at. He has brain trauma, but he's now regarded by others as being mentally retarded. And this is a world where drugs and violence are normalized, and where the weak are preyed upon and exploited. And everyone takes advantage of Tony. You look at young men today, they're treated as outcasts in our society. Your masculinity, it's demonized. Young men are shunned. And many realize all too well the lack of opportunities and incentives that they have. They feel rejected, abandoned. Is it any wonder that young men gravitate to crime? Would you rather be insulted and treated with disrespect or feared? If you had no opportunities and were terrified of the future, isn't some security better than none? A boy who grows up without a father, he can find that father figure in a gang. And an identity, even one based on false illusion of power and strength, is better than none. The stretch in jail and the dangers and the violence that they experience is worth it to these young men. Just so they can at least experience some taste of life and hope, even if it's fleeting. However, just like an addict, they're responsible for their own choices and the effects those choices have on others. But addiction is avoidance. It's denial of reality. It's an escape valve because life is pain. Life is suffering. And it's also responsibility. You're taking ownership of past traumas and not letting them define you. But when you see an addict, most times you're going to see a long trail of destruction. Destructive relationships and actions. Chaos. And for an addict, these destructive actions, they often go hand in hand with addiction, and it's their way of empowering themselves. Now, by hurting themselves or by hurting others, they can avoid facing reality, and it's something they can control, even if it results eventually in their own death or someone else's. At Tony, he attends the wedding party for his friend who works for the Duke. And the Duke, he mocks Tony in a speech, and Charlotte leaves the baby unattended while she goes and gets high. And men have a terrible habit of revisiting the sins of the father and the mother on themselves. Now, the hurtful words, the shaming, the judgment a parent inflicts on the son in turn plays out in his relationships, especially later on with his own children, and on himself. And this resentment and these unaddressed issues and trauma between parents and sons, these hurts that are never verbalized or addressed, they're going to find an outlet one way or another. Many men discover this the hard way when they replay the same abusive dynamic they had with their father or with their mother, with their own sons. These repressed memories and hurts, they can spark up once the son reaches a certain age, or when the boy naturally starts to form his own identity and begins to assert his own independence. And the father, that he can lash out or be overly critical, and it's driven by all this unaddressed resentment. Because contrary to popular belief, men are not actually bulletproof. And there's a poignant scene where Tony, he tries to locate his estranged mother, and he tracks her down to an apartment building, and he's told by an occupant over the intercom that his mother died years ago. And it's a painful moment to watch, but it's all too familiar to young men growing up in this environment. You know, young boys who are raised in single mother homes and don't grow up with a secure attachment to their mothers, they lack a sense of security and stability. And they tend to show a far higher degree of behavioral issues. Now, they act out, and they have the highest rates of incarceration and social deviancy, and something that's never addressed in relation to boys, even though the data is all too apparent. And the Duke tells Tony that he can wipe the debt if he agrees to murder the Duke's ex-wife, who works as an escort. And Tony, he initially agrees, but he backs out at the last second because he can't bring himself to kill anyone. But he tells the Duke, who then berates Tony, striking him repeatedly and telling him what a failure and embarrassment he is to him. A lot of men are weighed down by chains they can't even see. And it can be a scary experience for men. Now, they spin out of control or engage in destructive behavior, and they often feel like it's like they're compelled to do it and that they can't stop themselves. But to break free from addiction and from the chains of the past, a man has to face reality little by little, and that's what recovery is for an addict. Letting the world in, facing past trauma and taking responsibility for the present. It's recognizing patterns and recognizing unexpressed hurts, and realizing how those are impacting relationships and everyday life. Now, Tony here in the film, he took the extreme way. But for a man to forge his own individual identity, to separate himself from his father's influence, he needs to understand his father was playing out patterns from the past, operating from within a framework that he understood as the right way. Now, whether that relationship was one rooted in conflict or a more positive dynamic, letting go of resentment and hurt is key to formulating an identity as a man. And that's a painful process of acceptance and letting go. Tony, at the end of the film, he escapes with his baby in a desperate attempt to save his child from the same fate that he suffered. But it's a cycle that's doomed to repeat. And this trilogy is not for the faint-hearted, and the third installment is even more brutal when Milo finds himself in debt to a rival gang. But it's a fairly realistic depiction of the personalities that inhabit that world. It's well worth a watch.